A new year is full of surprises, but one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services. So when postage goes up, your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com is like your own personal post office, wherever you are. You can even take care of orders on the go with the mobile app. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Schedule package pickups, automatically find the cheapest and fastest shipping options, and seamlessly connect with every major marketplace and shopping cart. There's even a supply store where you can stock up on mailing supplies, labels, even printers. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. All you need is a computer or phone and printer. Take a chunk out of your mailing and shipping costs this year with Stamps.com. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a special offer that includes a 4-week trial, plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com code PROGRAM.
Into sports.
20 yards out, Hurst to shoot, don't you? Oh, what a goal for Fabinho! Wow!
Then get into the all-new OTB Sports app.
I think when he apologises to me, I probably will say hello to him, yeah. No.
Videos, sports news, live scores, interviews.
If Fabregas is going to come up to me in the street and give me some of the mouth that he would have given me on a football pitch, what would he do? He'd get a slap?
Plus, exclusive content on the OTB Podcast Network. The biggest names in sports, ready when you are. Search OTB Sports on your app store and download it now.
The OTB Podcast Network.
You're welcome back. So the latest in the Gordon Elliott situation, confirmation has come through that the case against him will be heard by the Irish Horse Racing Regulatory Board on Friday show. So there should be a quick enough resolution to the situation by the end of the week anyway. And then if horse racing's image wasn't tarnished enough already, a video has emerged of Rob James, amateur jockey, Cheltenham winner for Gordon Elliott last March indeed. In the video, there's a machinery there to take a dead horse away. One of the men nearby says, get up in her there. James mounts the dead mare, lying on the gallops, chuckles from all those around him. He's spoken to the Irish Field about the situation. The video dates back to 2016. He apologises profusely. He says his actions wholly inappropriate, disrespectful to a lovely five-year-old mare, he says, who unfortunately suffered sudden cardiac arrest. He adds, to try defend my stupidity at the time would add further insult and hurt to the many loyal people who've supported me during my career. I've caused embarrassment to my employers, my family, most importantly, the sport I love. I'm heartbroken by the damage I've caused and I'll do my best to try and make amends. We're joined by Lydia Hislop, a journalist, broadcaster in the world of racing. Lydia, you're very welcome.
Thank you.
Hard to probably sum up how much damage the past few days have done to the sport. Your thoughts on where we are?
I think they've done a tremendous amount of damage. I think that there's a social contract really between all sport, but particularly sport that involves animals and wider society, that we do our best for, we respect and we look after those animals that we utilise for sport. And I think one of the things that is thrown at horse racing and other industries involving horses is that the horses are just commodities, that they're not cared about. And unfortunately, the photo of Gordon Elliott and the video of Rob James goes some way for people to be making that argument. Now, clearly, it's not representative of the vast, vast, vast majority of those people who earn their living via horse racing and the industries related to it. They very much care for their horses. But sadly, this doesn't paint us well, paint the industry well.
Mm. Gordon Elliott has spoken again since his initial statement. He spoke to the Racing Post and he described his actions as an indefensible moment of madness. And he added as well, and I'm sure he is in the horrors, he said, when your world starts crumbling in front of you, it's a scary place to be. I hope people can understand how truly sorry I am and find some way to forgive me for what I've done. That was certainly a huge upgrade on the initial statement, which frankly just drew ridicule, really.
Yes, he would seem to have been very ill-advised initially, and a statement more like the one that he delivered most recently should have been the first thing that we heard from him.
The developments today, Cheveley Park, have taken their 8 horses away from the Elliott stable. So Henry de Bromhead and Willie Mullins will take those 8 horses. Envoy Allen in particular, catching the eye for obvious reasons, has gone to de Bromhead. I was listening to Richard Thompson at Cheveley Park, director and at the races this morning. He was saying certainly this is going to be the state of play for the short to medium term. And on the rationale behind the move, he was saying they were becoming aware of just how big the story was across the last 24 hours, because initially they were awaiting the outcome of the investigation.
Yes, that was the initial statement that they put out. And then since then, they said that as the story developed, first of all, they said they wanted verification. Well, they had that verification when they first made that statement. But clearly they have since reflected and talked amongst the team and decided that they had to make a different decision.
They're a big player. That's very significant news, isn't it?
It is. It is significant news. But really, at this point, we are now waiting on the IHRB to hold their inquiry, to hear the case put and the evidence put, and for them to come to a decision. There may be further developments between now and then, but at this stage, we are waiting for the proper, fair, thorough and due process. And I think everybody who was angered and betrayed and upset by that image and the video we've had since should very much want to be having a fair and thorough process, because that's the only way with which horse racing can show that it takes these things seriously, that it has a way of getting to the bottom of these incidents, that it doesn't just brush them under the carpet. Mm. And we're now looking to the authorities to be able to do that for on behalf of the industry. But it has to be a fair process. It has to be, you know, Gordon Elliott, you know, has to be heard there. In order for us, everybody, to have trust in the way that a sport is policed, the process has to be thorough and it has to be fair. Mm.
On the point of trust, I mean, that was one of the issues with the initial statement, which has been kind of, you know, brushed by now a little bit in the grand scheme of the whole story. Even in his conversation with the Racing Post, though, he's not getting into, you know, for instance, the thought behind the initial statement, the nature of the photo, who took it, what it says about the culture of the yard. None of that has been quite addressed yet. I mean, I don't know, is that kind of thing addressed on Friday before the investigation or before the board? But they all seem like important questions.
Yeah, I agree. I stated those questions very early on in this, and I think that it is important to find out who took the photo. It's important to find out who the other person standing nearby is, because I think that goes to the heart of what happened on that day, and it will be better able to understand the culture of the yard at that point. Because in his initial statement, of course, Gordon Elliott referred to a horse passing away dying on the gallops as being a sad time, which was rather incongruous with not just the image but the fact of taking a photograph. So I do think it is relevant to the case, particularly in terms of what happens next, because in many situations whereby a license holder has been reprimanded in not situations comparable to this, but in which a suspension has been brought forward, then sometimes somebody has stepped in as a caretaker, or somebody within the yard has been able to basically take over the yard quite smoothly. Well, I think those questions are relevant to what happens next, dependent on the IHRB's process.
Mm. A difficult thing to establish, isn't it, the culture? You know, like, I'm not even sure what answers you could elicit, but because we had, you know, various guests on who said, well, look, the horses are well looked after. And
well, they'd have to be well looked after. I mean, Gordon Elliott is an incredibly successful trainer. There is no way that the horses day in, day out are not incredibly looked after, incredibly well. You know, an unhappy horse does not run well. You do not get that level of success.
Yeah.
And also I hear from people who've been to the Gordon Elliott yard that so many of them, independent people who aren't necessarily friends with Gordon, have come away really impressed by the vibrancy and the energy at that yard. However, nonetheless, there was a moment here where at least two, possibly three people involved with the yard, we certainly know Gordon Elliott was one of them, did something incredibly reprehensible. And so that needs to be understood. It can give you an idea. Mm. But I also should say, I mean, I do feel very sorry for those people who work at that yard, who have put in so much work into getting those horses day in, day out, get up really early in the morning, give them all of that care, ride them out, look after them, and are so, you know, fundamentally interested in their welfare and their well-being. You know, this shouldn't be seen as, you know, something that goes across the whole yard. We just it shouldn't be seen like that. That would be really unfair to some very dedicated people.
Mm. So the Cheveley Park development, I suspect in part that's had something to do with the British Horse Racing Authority's move to suspend Elliott entries across British racing whilst the investigation is ongoing. Despite, obviously, you know, as we've established at this stage, not being in charge of the case. This is quite interesting, isn't it? They've acted unilaterally here. This is very much, you know, horse racing Ireland territory. Almost unprecedented, generally, I would presume, you know, both sides of the Irish Sea, the two authorities would generally act in tandem when it comes to things like suspensions. And if there was an investigation happening on one island, it would be the other would wait until that investigation was concluded. So this is pretty much unprecedented, I'm reading.
It's highly unusual, certainly. I don't know whether it's completely unprecedented. Generally, what would happen is that the authority who was in charge, who held the licence of the licensee, would be the person, the authority that would act, and then other authorities would reciprocate on that decision. As you say, this is the BHA acting unilaterally and very unusually. I think there are going to have to be bridges built between the Irish authorities and the British authorities after this. But seeing it from the British perspective, they are also acting on behalf of the sport as a whole, not just British racing, but Irish racing in general. Just as it is in Ireland, there has been a massive backlash to that image. And the British Horse Racing Authority felt that it needed to do some damage limitation, I would imagine. And so that is the reason that they have stepped in and made this call. And they made it at the time when they weren't sure at what point the IHRB will be able to come to the point of bringing a hearing process. Mm. Mm. So they stepped in and made a very decisive decision. Now, as I say, it's highly unusual. It is something that is going to require some bridge building afterwards. Right. But I think they did it in the best interests of the sport.
So you don't suspect the IHRB will be that enamoured with the British Horse Racing Authority decision?
I think, no, I don't. Right. Because it's so unusual. And usually the protocol is to wait and reciprocate rather than the other way around. However, as I say, I would stress that this is a highly, thankfully, unusual situation. Mm. And so perhaps usual protocols are not to be applied.
Every year, one thing is always predictable. Postage costs go up. Stamps.com gives you crazy discounts of up to 89% off USPS and UPS services, so your business will barely notice the change. Stamps.com has been indispensable for over 1 million businesses just like yours. It's like your own personal post office. No lines, no traffic, no waiting. Sign up with promo code PROGRAM for a 4-week trial plus free postage and a free digital scale. No long-term commitments or contracts. That's Stamps.com code PROGRAM.
Is it possible, the legalities of everything obviously could get very complicated and contested indeed. Is it possible for the BHA to continue a suspension beyond whatever sanction the IHRB might hand out? If they said, well, you've given them X number of months or whatever the sanction is, I don't want to preempt that. But is it conceivable that the BHA might say, well, we're coming down tougher on this guy?
I would have said not. I mean, the ball is in the IHRB court, but I don't want to prejudge or preempt that in any kind of way. The only power that the BHA has is to decline entries or declarations. That's the only power that they have over somebody whom they do not license. Mm. So the ball is very much in the IHRB court here. So I don't want to prejudge or preempt that.
Yeah. Something I want to get a sense from you of is the anti-racing lobby in the UK, because I was talking to somebody who knows they're racing, and he was just making the point to me that, you know, here in Ireland, it's far more mainstream, you know, and it's got a big media profile here, and it's a source probably of national pride, or certainly sporting pride, as you can imagine. A country of this size to be a leading light in anything really is rare. So when Ruby Walsh and Willie Mullins head over and conquer Cheltenham, you can imagine the scenes here, and it's a big deal. And so it's very mainstream, and I think it lives largely in an uncontested space. You know, greyhound racing at the moment is under big pressure. There was a TV, you know, equivalent of Panorama investigation into greyhound racing here last year, and been a big story. But horse racing, probably up until now, has done well to avoid those conversations. I do get the sense in the UK, it's under more pressure. Is that right? Is that your read of things?
I don't know. I always thought what you just said about Ireland was true. But then I look at the fact that Irish point-to-pointing is back, whereas British point-to-pointing knows is not back, whereas British point-to-pointing knows when it is restarting. And that, you know, in Britain, we were able to persuade the governments that was a viable case for crowds just before the second wave, that owners were able to attend. So, you know, I always thought that what you asserted about the status of Irish racing within Irish society was as you say, but actually I've come to reassess that slightly as a result of COVID. But yes, in terms of the anti-racing lobby within Britain, it is powerful. It was debated on the House of Commons. I think it was in 2019. They even talking about a question of whether the British Horse Racing Authority, British racing should be allowed to regulate itself, basically, whether there should be an independent body to step in and regulate horse racing. And that came out as a result of an unhappiness from wider society and a petition about whip abuses and in terms of the penalty structure. You know, people's the rate of whip infringements in Britain, if I can get my words out. Yeah. That led to a petition. There were enough signatures for that to be debated on the floor of the House of Commons. So yes, in those terms, the welfare lobby in Britain is powerful and it's organised.
Right. So I suspect that is somewhere in the ether when the BHA makes this decision. Yeah, of course. Yeah, come back in.
Sorry, can I just say, when I say welfare, I should actually probably say rights, animal rights, rather than animal welfare.
Sure, yeah. We understand the point perfectly. Sorry. So that's probably in the ether when the BHA are trying to deal with this situation, which is blown up now, especially with Cheltenham and the Grand National on the horizon.
Definitely. Absolutely. There's the two most scrutinised festivals are Cheltenham, in the middle of this month, and even more particularly the Grand National itself.
Because I saw
It is moving, the BHA is moving to protect that, because, you know, obviously Gordon Elliott has such a strong team heading towards Cheltenham, and he is intricately connected with the Grand National.
Because I saw just before Christmas, the Labour Party had an animal welfare manifesto, or maybe it was 18 months ago, and maybe that's what you're referencing as well. But the Labour contention was, well, can we justify the whip as a motivational tool? So it's a very live issue over there. I mean, it's hard to really give a metric as such, but you wonder what damage this week has done to the sport over in the UK as well, because every website I go onto, it's top story, it's a massive talking point, and it's indefensible is the issue. I mean, what can anyone in the industry say? You know, it's a one-off thing, or it's very much, a tiny minority. And then, of course, another video emerges of weirdly exactly the same thing happening. Just an odd urge to have or thing to do. But, you know, it's increasingly hard now for the sport to turn around and say, oh, look, this is total one-off situation here. I mean, I presume... everybody concerned with the sport is worried about the next video that comes out, because you really have to wonder now what else will come out.
I'm not going to preempt the idea that there could be further videos. I'm not going to discount them either. But I would point out that we're still talking about two people, or, you know, if you count the two people, we're talking about a handful of people. I'm thinking about the people who are surrounding the main protagonist in the video and the image. So a handful of people, as opposed to tens of thousands of people who work in the industry and who care for and have respect for and are concerned about the dignity and the well-being and the welfare of their animals. I know that this has got worldwide reach. I've had people tweeting me on the issue from Japan, from Australia, from America, all around the world. So the impact is not just felt in Ireland and in Britain, but globally. It doesn't really matter where something like that has happened. In terms of the industry worldwide's respect for the horse, that is damaging to it.
I take your point, it's a handful, and it's very hard for any of us to know what's going on behind the scenes. I'm certainly not immersed in that world, but it just speaks to a worry people might have. You know, human nature being what it is, these are animals. Profit is at stake, prestige, the respect being afforded to them. It's, you know, these videos are a couple of years old. It's not like anyone in those surrounds was that horrified that they came to light immediately, and so that's why the worry is there. And I think it's a very legitimate worry, and I'm not sure how horse racing assuages it, to be honest. I don't know what anyone can come out and say or do. I mean, I don't know if you've any obvious solution to that issue.
I think that it is important that opinion-leading individuals within the sport come out and make strong statements about the high standards with which the sport holds itself, and also their view that the image is indefensible. A number of people have made statements. You know, a number of individual trainers have made statements, and I would like to see more of them. Doing that, I think it is important. I think it's important not to try and diminish the issue. I do understand people who are saying have some concern and saying, is there not that people have apologised, and you know, is there not forgiveness, and can people not have a second chance? Well, you know, absolutely, but we haven't even got to the point whereby the case has been heard. Mm. You know, everything happens in fast forward on social media, doesn't it? I mean, sort of, you know, calling for the head on the first day, saying it's been overblown on the third day, moving on to the next on the second day, and moving on to the next thing on the third day. Yes. But actually, in real life, there is a process, and that is part of, you know, fairness and proportion and justness in society. So yeah, I would like, I want horse racing opinion formers, opinion leaders, as many of them have been, speaking out on behalf of the sport, explaining that those kind of practices are absolutely abhorrent to them, explaining, as they have before, you know, the care and the attention and the love that they have for horses, and leading by example and not shying away from this, because just trying to say, you know, brush it under the carpet and say, oh, you know, that doesn't represent us, I think they have to meet it square on and bravely, because this is something they can meet square on and bravely. This is not the horse racing industry. This is just a handful of mindless individuals.
Mm. Ruby Walsh certainly came out very strongly here on Irish radio, on 2FM over here, and Mick Fitzgerald obviously was on at the races, I think. Who else has come out strongly? Who's caught your eye, Lydia, and made a powerful statement in the world of racing?
Well, there's a number of people. A number of the British trainers have come forward today. Oliver Sherwood has spoken. David Bridgewater has spoken. This is one of the things that the Irish Trainers Federation, I know, have come out today and made a joint statement. The National Trainers Federation in Britain yesterday made a joint statement. I know that a number of trainers have contacted the BHA and the National Trainers Federation in Britain to register their concerns and urge both of those bodies to make a statement on it. Mm. Maybe it needs to be more public than that, but the point I would make about that is that, unlike other sports, this is it doesn't tend to have that huge PR machine behind it, the individuals here. So, you know, if a footballer in a club, for example, was to do something, everything would click in around him, and, you know, things would start taking over, the process would start taking over. You can see from Gordon Elliott's initial response that this sport isn't quite like that yet. Increasingly, it's getting that way. But it does mean that I don't feel that individuals quite have the appreciation of what is expected in these kind of circumstances. You know, they are appalled, but they don't realise that what the modern life now requires them to do, and very quickly, you know, within seconds, it seems sometimes with social media, is to come out and say how appalled they are.
Sure.
I think in some ways racing is, I'm not criticising it for this actually, it's slightly behind that. It does not have that massive machine behind it, because these are lots of disparate self-employed people around the country, in Britain or in Ireland.
A tough last question to answer, really. What's an appropriate sanction here?
I don't know. I would need to have some of those questions that you and I were discussing earlier in this session answered, I think. Mm. You would have to, and also my difficulty here is that I'm trying to set it in some sort of context, and I'm more aware of a context, say, in Britain than I would be in Ireland. I know that I was reading Kevin Blake's article on At the Races, in which he was reaching for the precedent of Davy Russell hitting a horse, which was initially he was given a caution, and then on appeal that was up to 4 days. In Britain, we've had a number of incidents like that have dealt with more severely. We had a trainer called Mick Quinn, who was found guilty of neglecting three of his horses, and he was given initially 3 years, and that was reduced to 18 months on appeal. But that was back in the year 2000, and things have moved on now in 2021. So not only is one that a different authority, so not strictly comparable, the BHA and the IHRB penalties, it's also a different time. I think in Britain, it basically comes under what we would call bringing racing into disrepute.
Yeah.
And the range for that particular penalty, the entry point is 3 months, and the range is 1 month to 3 years, and you can get it down from 3 months if you've got some mitigation to offer. I don't see what mitigation there would be to offer. So you'd be looking potentially at a 3 month plus suspension in Britain. I can't speak for Ireland, and okay. I don't want to prejudge its process, because that's separate from Britain.
No, that's fine. We'll find out on Friday, I suppose, or shortly thereafter. Lydia Hislop, journalist, broadcaster. I know you're very busy and getting lots of requests. We appreciate you making time for us this evening. Thanks, Lydia.
Thank you, Joe.
That was an OTB Podcast Network presentation.